This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Dr. Brené Brown's 2010 TED Talk, The Power of Vulnerability, struck a nerve. It quickly went viral and now has nearly 21 million views. Her follow-up talk has almost 6 million. The University of Houston-based research professor is now author of two best-selling books based on years of data. Her message: authentic human interactions, innovation, professional satisfaction, and meaningful relationships are only possible when we dare to expose our vulnerabilities and confront our shame. The message has been adapted by corporate leadership teams and Green Berets, along with therapists and yoga teachers. Ultimately, boldly doing battle with the self means sometimes landing flat on your face. And her new book, Rising Strong, is about how to get up, dust yourself off, and be willing to do it all over again. Brené Brown, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be with you.
Well, you write in the new book about the physics of vulnerability. Now, what does that mean?
You know, it was just the simplest way I could think of capturing this idea that if we're brave enough, often enough, we're going to fall down. We're going to experience heartbreak, disappointment, failure, screw-ups. It's just that simple. And I think people want to believe, well, if I try to be brave, I might risk getting hurt. But what I have found in my work is that if you are brave enough, you're not going to risk getting hurt. You're going to probably get hurt. And that's especially true, I think, in this world of kind of hypercritical, unforgiving scrutiny.
So we will fall. And you've done a lot of research on how people get back up, which is a process you lay out in the book as the reckoning, the rumble, the revolution. Can you walk us through that briefly?
Yeah, I'd love to. It was interesting to me because the big research question I asked was, what do men and women who fall, who really struggle and get back up and are more courageous after having struggled and rising, what do they have in common? And there was a very clear process that they all really engaged in that almost became a practice in their lives. The first piece is the reckoning, where these men and women recognized that they were emotionally hooked by something, that their emotions were at play as a result of struggle, and they were willing to get curious about what is the emotion that I'm feeling, what has me so hooked, and what's really going on for me around this fall. And the second piece was, I call it the rumble. I was going to call it the dance, but then the more I got into the data, I'm like, no, it's not that balletic. It's like, it's a rumble. And this was the really big piece for me, the aha for me, is that what these men and women kept saying to me over and over was that they immediately reality checked the first story they told themselves about what was happening. And I would ask, like, what do you mean? They're like, well, you know, right when something hard happens, I think I have it all figured out. But if I'm willing to step back and really feel my way through it and dig into the episode even deeper, I figure out new things. And so the rumble is really about being very mindful of that first narrative we make up when something hard happens. Because when, let me tell you something, when something hard happens, we're neurobiologically wired to give emotion the first crack at understanding what it is. We need a story. Our brain scrambles and makes up a story very quickly to tell us what's happening, why it's happening, who's dangerous, who's safe. And so these men and women rumbled with that story and really dug into it, poked around, and reality checked it. And then the last thing was this process of recognizing that they're emotionally hooked, getting curious, and then digging into a story and rumbling with it wasn't just a process that they used once or twice. It became a practice in their lives. They were always kind of checking out the reliability of that inner narrator.
I want to go back to that idea of the narrative, the story, because all of the things that you just mentioned involve the kind of stories that we establish for ourselves. And you write a lot about the power of story on this biological and emotional level. Tell us more about what you found from researchers, your own and others, about how the brain kind of rewards our old stories.
You know, it was so fascinating to me because when something difficult happens, our brain is wired for one thing above all else, and that's survival. And so when there's a perceived threat, and a perceived threat can be, you know, getting fired, or it can be a strange look from our boss walking out of a meeting. We can feel, well, something's going on. And so our brain immediately goes into figure this out, get safe mode. And so our brain rewards us for patterns that help ensure our safety. And the brain recognizes that kind of narrative structure of beginning, middle, and end. And so when we make up a story, so let's say you and I walk out of a meeting and you give me a funny look, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I knew Virginia didn't like me. I knew she didn't think I was smart. I knew she didn't think my ideas were very good. My brain immediately makes up a story. The dangerous thing is that we're rewarded chemically for that story, and we're rewarded whether it's accurate or not.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Dr. Brené Brown. Maybe you've heard of her. Her videos on vulnerability have been seen by tens of millions of people. Well, now she's found that if you're going to be vulnerable, you're going to fall. So how do you get back up? Her new book is all about that. It's called Rising Strong. Another thing in the book about the way that we process emotion is that there's this habit, I guess, of offloading emotions. Now, what does that mean?
Well, I think what's true for all of us in general is that we're better at inflicting pain on people than we are at feeling our own pain, or better at lashing out and hurting others rather than feeling our own hurt. So over time, we develop ways, rather than to feel pain and feel our emotion and get curious about it, we have ways to offload it. Maybe we rage, maybe we push things, I call it chandeliering, we push things down so far thinking that we can stay stoic and we can, you know, the stiff upper lip. And then one seemingly innocuous comment or something happens at work, and then all of a sudden we jump through our skin and we rage and we let loose. I think most of us have worked for someone like that. The other thing that we do is we numb. We use, you know, alcohol, television, sex, the internet, a myriad of things. We numb emotion rather than feeling it. Sometimes we use anger and blame. When something goes wrong, rather than feeling disappointed, we try to figure out whose fault it is, and we go into blaming. And so there's a lot of different ways, rather than feeling emotion, we push it off. And I think the hard thing is that emotion really dictates a lot of our behavior and thinking. So if we don't have some control and understanding of our emotion, we don't have a lot of control over our thinking, our behavior.
So if these are responses that we've been doing for years and stories, you know, get rewarded mm-hmm. that we've been making up for years, how do we recognize them? How do we discern the stories and the bad behavior from the truth?
That was a huge research question for me, is that, okay, I understand that these people engage in this process, but how does it work? And I have to say, close to 70% of the participants really documented those really kind of first stories. I call them SFDs, kind of stormy first drafts, the ones where we really are making up something to help us understand it. And by writing it down, and you know, there's a lot of research on the power of writing things down. And I don't mean a dissertation. I mean like on a post-it note or text it to yourself, jot it in a journal. I'm thinking about James Pennebaker's work from UT, University of Texas, Austin, that writing allows us to see, okay, here is what I've got in front of me. Here's what I'm making up about what's happening. What do I know to be true? It was so fascinating for me, because when you look in the research, you find that a story that has limited actual data points, where we go behind and fill in with our ideals and values, that's basically the definition of a conspiracy. And so one of the things that these men and women do who have the capacity to rise strong is they really reality check that conspiracy. Is it true that that look meant this? Am I assigning all this to something, or is it true? And I think what we find is the more courageous way to live, if we walk out of a meeting and you look funny, you know, you give me throw a funny look my way, is for me to walk up and say, hey, Virginia, we were walking out of that meeting this morning, and I thought you kind of looked at me in a funny way, and I made up that you have a concern with something I shared in there, or that you're concerned about my idea. I just want to check in with you and see what's going on, which gives you the opportunity to say, no, I just I was late for another meeting, and my tennis elbow is acting up. And then all of a sudden, this huge conflict and this swirling narrative that, you know, but we don't do that normally. We don't check things out. What we do is now I'm angry, and now you asked me to do a favor for you, and I said, no, I'm not going to do it. And now you're thinking, what's going on with Brené? And it's just a very simple question to ask people, you know, as people are listening today, like, how many of you have ever gotten in a conflict with someone, and that person walked out of your office or out of the living room, and you have an entire narrative made up about what's happening?
I've never done anything like that, Brené.
Me neither. I'm just saying, theoretically.
but you know, what you're talking about is more vulnerability and exposure. I mean, there's the risk that that person might say to you, oh, you know what, Brené, you really did disappoint me in that meeting. I mean, you're making me think of this expression, I don't know if you've heard it, that you can't save your rear end and your face at the same time.
Oh, yeah, no, you can't.
But so more vulnerability, really? Is that the answer?
Yes.
We have to just expose ourselves more? But
yes,
what's the danger?
I know it's the danger. Okay, so the danger is that I circle back with you and say, hey, we walked out of the meeting. You looked at me funny. Were you upset about something that happened? And you said, you know what? As a matter of fact, I really did not appreciate the way that you kind of threw that story on the table when, you know, we're still working on it. And I've asked everyone not to share it until we have it complete. But that's better. It's uncomfortable. But let me tell you, the number of uncomfortable moments in our lives is directly correlated to the level of bravery and courage we have with our lives. Because then at least that way I have the ability to say, oh my God, I'm sorry. I apologize. You're right. I got really excited about it and I didn't think about it. Or I have the ability to say, you know what, Virginia, I wasn't in that meeting last week and I didn't realize it. I apologize. Let me help you clean it up and let's move forward. But either way, we're better off for it.
Well, you have advised us how to own ourselves, to dig in deep, be willing to fall, now how to get up. So where to next?
You know, I don't know. I really don't know. And for someone who writes about vulnerability and uncertainty, you'd think I'd be comfortable not knowing, but I'm not comfortable. But I actually don't know. And I think I'm just going to let it emerge.
Well, what a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Virginia. I appreciate it.
Dr. Brené Brown, she's a research professor at the University of Houston, and her TED Talks have been seen almost 27 million times. She has 2 New York Times bestsellers to her credit, and her new book is called Rising Strong. There's more on the book at wordofmouthradio.org.